You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Tuesday to you. We appreciate you being here. Christina Long will join me in studio a little bit later to talk Arkansas football. But first, we're joined by Benjamin Rosenberg. He's a beat writer for the Columbus Dispatch in Mississippi, covers the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Of course, Arkansas and Mississippi State will play Saturday at 11:45 on SEC Network. Benjamin, we appreciate you being here.
Sure thing. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so what's the feeling down there right now about this game this weekend?
I think, you know, they're so hungry for a win right now because obviously Mississippi State coming in on a 6-game losing streak, which is the longest losing streak the program has had since 2005. But they've, you know, there's no such thing, as Jeff Lebby has said time and time again, as a moral victory. He said that after the game against Texas when they were within one score for pretty much the entire first half. Before Texas pulled away late. Same thing against Georgia when they showed a lot of fight in the second half. I mean, if you told me before the season or even going into that week that they're going to score 31 points against Georgia, I think they would have taken that 100 times out of 100. And then last week against Texas A&M, that was pretty much exactly how I felt that game was going to go. Another 10-point loss. So, I mean, the offense is definitely starting to find some things, even with a true freshman, Michael Van Buren, at quarterback. He took over in that role following a season-ending injury to Blake Shapen about a month ago against Florida. So, I mean, he's a four-star recruit out of Maryland. He played a national schedule in high school against some of the top teams in the country. He's Jeff Lebby's guy. He recruited him and got him to flip from Oregon pretty late in the process. They're definitely excited about the future with him. On the flip side, though, this defense has got to be the worst in the SEC, one of the worst in the country, and maybe one of the worst in program history because they've had a hard time stopping just about anybody. Did okay against the run against Texas A&M, and they did force a couple of interceptions from both Carson Beck in Georgia and Connor Wegman at A&M. But, I mean, they couldn't get off the field on third down. They allowed a touchdown or a field goal pretty much every time when there wasn't a turnover. So they've had a hard time stopping really just about everybody they've played this year.
I do these SEC efficiency ratings, and basically it takes into account how often a team scores or how often a team, you know, stops teams from scoring. And Mississippi State, like you say, they're way below even the 15th place team. Vanderbilt, what exactly has been the issue for them defensively? Because it feels like that's what's holding Mississippi State back right now.
It is for sure. And we kind of knew that they were going to struggle coming in. I don't think we knew they were going to struggle this much. We certainly didn't expect they were going to give up 41 points to Toledo. But yeah, they just don't have a lot of playmakers on that side of the ball. It's really just about star power when it comes down to it. Coleman Hutzler is a first-time defensive coordinator. He's worked at a lot of places in the SEC. He was a linebackers coach last year at Alabama. But yeah, he was a co-DC for 1 year at Texas during the COVID season, but this is his first time really calling plays on his own for an entire defense. And while Jeff Lebby and his new coaching staff had a good deal of success bringing in offensive players out of the transfer portal over the winter and in the spring, that cannot be said on the defensive side of the ball. Really, they just got one SEC caliber starter out of the portal on defense, and that's Stone Blanton, a linebacker from South Carolina. I mean, Isaac Smith is a sophomore at safety. He's a good football player, but he's kind of got to just play a little bit up in that star position, kind of a hybrid linebacker, defensive back, and sort of rack up tackles because there's no one else there to do it. They have started to force a few turnovers. They forced multiple turnovers in each of the last three games, all against top 15 teams. And I know Arkansas has been a little bit turnover prone. But so there's maybe a chance to create some momentum plays there, but I mean, Texas A&M just converted third down after third down in that game last Saturday. They were 6 out of 7, I believe, in the first half, and then converted a few more on the first drive of the second half, including a 3rd and 23, which is just absolutely backbreaking. So, yeah, and up front on the line of scrimmage, this team is just bad. And that goes on the defensive side of the ball and on offense, too. They've struggled a good deal in pass protection as well.
Mississippi State, they're on their third coach in 3 years. Of course, Mike Leach passed away, and then Zach Arnett was the coach there for a year, and now Jeff Lebby. I wonder how much of their struggles do you think is just a program trying to figure out who they are right now because there has been so much turnover?
I think that's a good deal of it. They're starting to find their identity now this year, but that's why this hire, it has to hit. It has to work because they can't just go back to the drawing board again. They've done that too many times. It's going to hurt you in recruiting. It's going to hurt you when you're trying to attack the transfer portal. Obviously, they had dealt with a horrific tragedy when Mike Leach passed away a couple of years ago. And Zach Arnett, they promoted him from the defensive coordinator position, and he was pretty clearly in over his head for much of last year. And they ended up canning him with a couple games remaining on the schedule. And now, yeah, Jeff Lebby, they needed to go with an offensive guy, a guy with an offensive background. He's been a very good offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, Ole Miss, UCF, pretty much everywhere he's gone. And that was really what this program needed after last year's offense was absolutely abysmal. And we're starting to see the effects of that. I think they're starting to hit on some explosive plays. But again, the defensive side of the ball, as well as the offensive line, is going to have to be the top priority in the upcoming offseason.
Seems like Michael Van Buren, you mentioned him earlier, he's been a little bit of a revelation for him the last couple of weeks against Georgia A&M. I'm looking at his numbers here, 306 yards against Georgia, 242 yards against A&M, both of those passing, three touchdowns, one interception in both games. Has he opened up the offense a little bit?
He has a little bit. I mean, not like it wasn't open with Blake Chapin at quarterback. They've just been trailing pretty much in every game throughout the entire game. So they've had to go to the air a little bit more, but that's obviously what they want to do. They do want to run the ball, and they're starting to have a little bit more success with it. I mean, with Devon Booth and Johnny Daniels, a couple of transfers, Devon Booth coming over from Utah State, and then Daniels, top junior college running back. But yeah, I think Michael Van Buren, what we're seeing is he's becoming more and more confident. He obviously was developed at a high level before he came to the college ranks. He's also quite old for a freshman. He turned 20 over the summer. And like I said, he played a national schedule in high school, going up against teams from California and Florida and Texas and powerhouse programs all over the country. So I think that. That the game against Georgia is where we really saw him grow the most. That was a second start coming off a bye week following the game against Texas. And the first half of that game, he was not good. He was 5 out of 15. He was just missing his receivers on slants. He did connect on one big play down the field that started to open things up, but he threw a bad interception toward the end of the half. Then he comes out of the locker room and he's a different quarterback in the second half of that game, and really, keeps Mississippi State in it until almost the very end. And then against A&M, that's a really good pass rush that the Aggies have. And especially in the second half, they made some adjustments and they had him under duress pretty much the whole game long. He took some shots. He looked a little woozy at times, but he hung in there. He knows he's going to get hit. He's starting to develop a real rapport with some of those receivers like Kevin Coleman and Kelly Akari, and Mario Craver is a freshman who I'm not sure if he's going to be able to go this week because he had an injury in the second half last week. But I think we're really starting to see this young quarterback get better on a weekly basis.
And he's a true freshman, right? No, he's not a redshirt freshman.
He is a true freshman. He's on the older side, but yes, he is a true freshman. Was playing high school football last year.
Are you surprised that he doesn't run more? He looks like a player that could run, but the rushing stats really aren't there.
A little bit, honestly. I think we saw some of that from Blake Chapin. I don't know if it's confidence or if he just wants to make a play down the field or if it's just the protection that he's seeing. He certainly has the ability to run against Texas. He scored his first career touchdown when a big lane just opened up for him up the middle late in that game. So I'm a little bit surprised we haven't seen more where that came from. Maybe against some of the opponents remaining on this schedule, he'll have the opportunity to do that. But I think that's sort of another step for him where he can continue to grow and get better.
Of course, Jeff Lebby, he's the brother-in-law of Kendall Briles, who spent 3 years here as an offensive coordinator at Arkansas. I wonder, have you spoken to him at all about how much Kendall or Art Briles are influences on this offense, and maybe how it's similar to how it's different from what we've seen here?
Not a whole lot, honestly, but obviously, Jeff Lebby was part of Art Briles' staff at Baylor for a long time. I know he left there in the wake of the scandal that took place there when Art Briles was fired. But yeah, I mean it's his version of what they call the veer and shoot, sort of that spread offense that they like to run. They do enjoy opening things up and taking shots down the field. He expressed that at the very beginning. We haven't seen a whole lot of it I mean, we've seen it from time to time. But he also talked, and they really practiced the tempo during the preseason, that they were going to just go fast and hustle to the line and snap the ball before the defense can even get set. And even that has been a little bit, we've seen it at times, and at times they've gone away from it and huddled and tried to go a little bit slower. At times it's made sense, of course, when you're playing a Texas or a Georgia on the road, you kind of want to control the ball and hold on to it as long as possible and keep your defense off the field for as much of the game as you can. And I'm sure probably having a true freshman at quarterback has something to do with it as well. So we're not seeing the entire wide open offense that was promised when he came on board. But of course, this is still only year one, and they've played an awfully tough schedule since we've gotten into conference play.
If you've never been to a game at Starkville, being there in person, there's nothing that can replicate the noise that the cowbells make. And Sam Pittman got asked about this yesterday and kind of sidestepped the question. But I wonder if it's something, you've heard complaints about. It's that in this era now where you've got the radio transmission between the coach and the players on the field, the helmet, the speakers in the helmet, the cowbells and how they might influence that communication. And I wondered, I mean, do you feel like Mississippi State's kind of on borrowed time with the cowbells? Because it's something that's always kind of been underlying that I feel like opponents feel is a little bit of an unnecessary advantage that Mississippi State has.
Yeah, we asked about some of those things before the season started as well, with the helmet communication. I think it could even affect Mississippi State as well on defense. I know when the center is over the ball, the fans have to rest the cowbells, and they have a sign on the video board that tells them, "Rest your bell, just yell." Not always the best at following that. I know in the Egg Bowl last year, they weren't too great at following those instructions, but I think they do know how important it is to maintain those cowbell privileges. It's really an exception, and I think Davis Wade Stadium being on the smaller side by SEC standards helps them in terms of just still being able to use them. It is loud. I'll tell you that. The press box in Starkville is open, so we hear them as much as the fans and the players do. I know that half hour warning before kickoff, and in pregame ceremonies, I think earplugs are going to be a good idea for those traveling to cover this game.
Worst headache I ever had was a double overtime Arkansas Mississippi State game in Starkville in 2010. I knew to bring earplugs. The next time I came down there, this feels like a little bit of a trap game for Arkansas. They just played LSU. Obviously, they played Tennessee the week before it. They've got Ole Miss and Texas coming up, the 2 weeks after. You think Mississippi State likes its chances at an upset?
I think they have to. I mean, the coaching staff has been telling them, "Hey, we can win." They've been saying that against Texas and Georgia and A&M, and I think they're looking at this game. I mean, they're just hungry for something. They need something. They need to win one of these SEC games just to build confidence. And they've still got some really tough tests in coming up in November, where they play at Tennessee, home against Missouri, and then at Ole Miss. So I think they're really looking at this Arkansas game and almost being like, "Hey, if we're going to have one, it kind of has to be this one." I know Missouri looked kind of vulnerable too in recent weeks. But I think that, the Bulldogs will be hungry and up for this one. I think it may be a little bit to their detriment that it is an early kickoff, because the crowd may not be quite as much of a factor. I think we saw that last year when Mississippi State traveled to Fayetteville for an 11 a.m. kickoff, and the crowd was maybe not as much of a factor as I expected it to be. And that game was obviously a little bit of a snooze fest. But yeah, I think the Bulldogs are definitely looking at this game as the closest thing to a must win remaining on their schedule, besides the UMass game next week, a little bit of a break in for non-conference contest.
Before we get you out of here, a non-football question. We've got a couple of soccer teams that we cover, Arkansas and Mississippi State. Arkansas went down there and lost as the number one team a couple of weeks back, 1-0. They're 1-7-1, 1-7-0 in conference. Mississippi State, they had a game rained out against South Carolina. It was the rains that was associated with one of those hurricanes that went up the East Coast. They've got to reschedule that, right? Because that game is basically going to determine, or it could potentially determine, which of these teams win an SEC title.
Yeah, Mississippi State has never won an SEC championship in soccer before. This is easily the best season in the history of their program. They're in the top five in all the major polls in the RPI. So it's been really exciting to have sort of the onboarding and people on campus discovering that team and that sport and everything James Armstrong has built. But yeah, that South Carolina game, they'll have to make a trip back to Columbia probably next week because you've got a full week off that everyone has between the end of the regular season and the start of the SEC tournament down in Pensacola. I know Tennessee and Florida had a game postponed in Gainesville for a similar reason, and they're going to reschedule that one too. So I think that they probably build in that week for so that they can reschedule games in the event of something like this happening. And also probably because the SEC tournament is so compressed with teams having to play three, some possibly even four games in an 8-day span. So in soccer, that's pretty demanding.
That's that it is a lot. It is a lot. Benjamin Rosenberg of the Columbus Dispatch. You can read his work there. Benjamin, thanks for taking time.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you for being here. Christina Long will be on desk with me when we come back, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers. At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Christina Long here with me now, managing editor of Hogs Illustrated. Sam Pittman had his normal Monday press conference yesterday, and there was a lot of injury news that came out of it, the primary one being that Arkansas does not know if they're going to have Jaquindon Jackson available this weekend.
Yeah, he said he's very questionable. He's been kind of dealing with an ankle thing off and on. You know, it's been hard for him to stay on the field these last few games. And Pittman said he's been having a thing with that right ankle, which was the same thing that kind of got, it looked like, tweaked late in the game on Saturday, and he left the game, went to the locker room. And so he didn't seem to indicate that that was going to necessarily be, you know, the end of his season or anything like that, but he did say he's questionable for this week. You know, I think it'll just kind of be a week-to-week kind of thing as we move forward. But yeah, he did say he's questionable. We'll see what happens with the injury report when that comes out on Wednesday and then how that gets updated throughout the week.
He just doesn't look well. I mean, it's like, you know, he'll come in, he'll run for 4 or 5 yards, maybe bust off an 8 to 10 yard run, and then he'll go out of the game. Just not a lot of durability there with him right now because of the ankle injury.
Right. And that was, you know, he dealt with issues at Utah too. He had, you know, I think it was an ankle, like a low ankle sprain that turned into a foot injury. And I don't know if it was in the same foot. I haven't looked to see if that was also the right. So I don't know if it's a flare up with the same thing or something different. But yeah, I mean, it's something that's troubled him in his career. It's sad too, because, you know, when he started his time in Arkansas and he got off to such a great start, we were asking him all the time, you know, it's got to feel so good to be doing this, given that you were unhealthy all last year. Mm-hmm. And he was like, you know, I feel like myself again, all this stuff. And then, you know, to be right back dealing with this kind of thing again, it's unfortunate for him personally.
It's just how it's the nature of that position.
Yeah.
You don't get running backs that make it through the whole season without injuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they just are always playing banged up. And, you know, we've seen it even with another guy in why do I always want to say Tyrell Reed?
Rodney Hill.
Rodney Hill. I've been doing this all season. For some reason, ever since they committed, I don't know. Rodney Hill. Rodney Hill obviously has been out for a couple of games now, and we don't know. That's the MCL injury, not a tear, but some kind of issue there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got an issue now. Braylon Russell seems to be healthy because he's been kind of in and out. You know, he hasn't gotten the kind of work that Jackson's been getting. So, you know, that's just kind of, like you said, the nature of being a running back.
Pittman said Arkansas is going to, quote, saddle up Braylon Russell to lead the running game against Mississippi State. He looked good during that last drive against Tennessee, and then, you know, pretty much the whole running game disappeared against LSU.
Yeah, I mean, he's really confident in Braylon Russell. He's been saying kind of every week how they expect his workload to increase. Now, when you have a guy like Jackson doing what Jackson was doing early in the year, it's hard to take carries away from him. But now that you've got a health problem, having a guy like Russell is so important for them depth-wise. And Pittman talked about how he called Russell into his office, which he said normally if a player gets called into his office, it's not a good thing. But he called him in and basically was like, listen, man, like, this is your opportunity. You know, what are you going to do with it? And wanted him to know that he's confident in him. You know, he wanted to kind of give him a little bit of a confidence boost and kind of tell him that he believed in him headed into this week, knowing that Russell was going to, even if Jackson's, you know, able to play, Russell will probably have more carries than usual while they try to kind of get Jackson right. So, you know, he was kind of telling him, be ready for this. This is your moment. You know, we trust you.
Jalen Braxton is going to be out for a little bit longer. There was, I feel like there was some optimism during the bye week that he would be back fairly soon. Was ruled out for the LSU game, and now Pittman says that it will probably be at least the Texas game before you see him.
Yeah, it was. The other thing that was weird was he had told us before that that was a tendonitis issue, and then yesterday somebody followed up and said, is he still dealing with the tendonitis? And Pittman said, yes. And then he said, well, actually, it's more of a leg injury, and I'll leave it at that. So some kind of a leg thing for Jalen Braxton. Yeah, he seemed to say he doesn't expect him back before the second bye week, which I think is November 9th is their next open date. So that doesn't mean he will be available after that, but it won't be sooner than that. So we'll have to see with him.
And it was kind of interesting, I thought, what he said about Patrick Kudus, who's been out all year with the back injury. He said he was available against LSU, but they're hopeful to redshirt him. So they've got five games left, so they got to figure out if they're going to redshirt him, which of those four of those five games are they going to play him in?
Right. They kind of got to figure out when they need him. I also imagine they don't want to rush him in, given how long, you know, he missed most of preseason practice, too. I mean, he hasn't practiced with this offense in such a long time, and he's, you know, been practicing now for a couple weeks. So, you know, I don't think they want to throw him back in there and disrupt some of that flow, right? But he talked about how he thinks it'll help in the long run. You know, it's a really good depth addition. And so, yeah, they have to pick and choose when they're going to use him because they do want to maintain that eligibility.
I don't know how much flow the offense has had.
Well, that's true.
I mean, it's kind of like a steady trickle. It's not much of a flow.
Right. But you don't want to make it worse, right?
I guess. He does like, it seemed like Pittman listened to him, he does like the move they made on the offensive line prior to the LSU game where they took Keyshawn Blackstock and moved him to guard, took Amarian Harris and moved him to tackle, just basically flipped those two.
Yeah, he said he felt like that kind of suited their skill sets a little bit more and even their body types. You know, he felt like Harris would be more suited against those guys out at tackle. So, I mean, I think it seems to have worked fine. I mean, the offensive line, it wasn't much worse, I guess. It wasn't really much better, I don't think, against LSU. And so, you know, they probably need some more time to work at that position. That was a change they made right after the Tennessee game. They practiced it that way for a couple weeks before LSU. That was not last minute or anything. So it's interesting to make a change like that midseason, but it might prove to be, you know, a wise one.
Seems like Arkansas and coaches will tell you, you've got to have an appropriate amount of, some might use the word respect, some might use the word fear, an appropriate amount of fear for your opponent. You know, Pittman was really talking up Mississippi State yesterday, and we talked to Benjamin Rosenberg about this. They're looking better. You know, they didn't look good against Florida. They didn't really look very good against Texas. But the last couple of weeks, Georgia game was never close, but it was never out of reach either, if that makes any sense. And then the A&M game, that was probably the most competitive game Mississippi State's played this year against an SEC team. It just feels like they're improving enough to make you fear them a little bit this week, especially with some of these injuries and inconsistencies that Arkansas is dealing with.
Yeah, and I heard you talk on the show yesterday about how, you know, the mark of a good coach is how much you improve during the season, and I think that's something that's been important for Jeff Lebby in year one. And that's such a hard thing as a first-year coach, is how do you get guys, you know, what are they playing for when you know they're not playing for, you know, a bowl game potentially or whatever, you know? So how do you, when the season's not going well, especially in your first year, you know, how do you get them to get up for games like this? How do you get them to want to make those improvements for you? And that's worked for them, and they are getting better. So, yeah, I mean, I think the offense is not like it was. You talked about how the defense is one of the bottom in the SEC. I don't know how much That's improved.
They are the bottom. Yeah. Not one of.
Okay. They are one of one.
They are rock bottom. Yeah. It is ocean floor defense.
And I mean, has that improved that much? I mean, we've seen them score, not put up much. More points, but that hasn't really improved.
Not so. Much. I mean, you know, you look at the numbers here. These are their four SEC games. Florida scored 45 points in 10 possessions. Texas scored 35 in 10 possessions. Georgia scored 41 in 11. And Texas A&M scored 34 in 10. So, I mean, it's pretty consistent that they're giving up about half the points possible.
Right. So they're scoring more, but they're not really holding anybody to any less.
That's right.
So that's something where Arkansas's offense needs to get right, maybe, and maybe this is an opportunity for them to do that.
And I mentioned this yesterday. You look at the teams that Mississippi State has played: Florida, Texas, Georgia, and A&M. All of those are top half SEC offensively, at least in terms of efficiency. Arkansas is they're down there. They're not as bad as Oklahoma. Thank goodness for them. You know, they're not as bad as Kentucky, not as bad as Auburn. They're about, you know, they're neck and neck with South Carolina. And so the question I have is Mississippi State's defense bad because they have played good teams, good offenses, or maybe are those offensive numbers better because they played Mississippi State? Now you get an inefficient Arkansas offense going in there, and they've been inefficient all year. Even the Oklahoma State game, when they're going up and down the field, they weren't scoring a whole lot of points in that game. And so I don't know. I feel like this weekend is going to be very telling for Arkansas offensively against a defense like Mississippi State.
Yeah, and it'll probably tell us a lot about Mississippi State's defense. That's
right.
A good point about who they've played. I mean, I feel like we said a similar thing about Tennessee when they came in here, and we talked about how they hadn't really played great teams yet, and Arkansas was probably going to be the toughest yet for them, and then we kind of saw how that went. Now, I still think Tennessee probably, on paper, coming before the game began, Tennessee looked like it should beat Arkansas, and then it didn't, you know, and Arkansas outplayed them thoroughly. So, you know, you never really know what's going to happen when you get teams like this that, you know, it's hard to tell based on who they've played before and when they're playing a team that's unlike the teams they've played before.
I just feel like it's been a theme in the last few years for Arkansas that when they have that first disappointing loss in Oklahoma State, I guess that was a disappointing loss, and they didn't play well the next week against UAB, quite frankly. I mean, look at all the other teams. Pull up UAB's schedule here. I mean,
they're getting destroyed.
Army scored what, 70 on them,
something like
that. I think they did. So even against UAB, they won, but they didn't play well. It has been a theme that when they have a disappointing loss, they don't bounce back very well the next week. Doesn't mean they always lose, but it just feels like more often than not, they've just had trouble getting back up after they have those disappointing losses. And so, you know, when you've got a Mississippi State team that's at home, they got a freshman quarterback who seems like he's playing a lot better. The whole team, maybe other than the defense, so half the team, it just feels like they're playing a little bit more confident. I don't know. It feels like a weird game for Arkansas this
week. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think there's definitely trouble. Hey, at least it's not at home. They tend to drop games at home when they shouldn't, too. Yeah. We've talked about that before, about their home record and their home problems. But, no, I mean, I think
– think about their last – they beat Tennessee at home, but three of their last four games at home, they've lost by 38, 34, and 24 points.
Yeah, and it's just so puzzling for them to be coming off a loss like this where – you know, you're coming off such a big win. We talked about, and we had talked about on the show multiple times about how it was great that they had that bye week after the Tennessee win to kind of get over the Tennessee win and put it behind them. And I don't think necessarily that they were still having that, what you call the emotional hangover from that. I don't know that that's why they lost, but to come from that, something that I wrote about after the game was, you know, to set yourself up on such a big stage and then to just not even really be competitive against LSU was just, that's why that was so disappointing. So
that's not the first time we've seen that in the last few years.
Exactly. So following up these, you know, following up performances is just, I feel like you never know what you're going to get with Arkansas at this point.
It is and it may not just be Arkansas. I mean, you look around the SEC right now and everybody's got a loss.
Yeah.
LSU and Texas A&M. I mean, who would have had those two as the last two
definitely not
undefeated
me.
Teams in conference play? I feel like there's probably something to the transferring, how it affects college football right now. There's probably something to that about how you just have inconsistency from week to week, right? I mean, I think you look at every SEC team and you say, wow, what happened there?
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm overstating that, but it just feels like it's happening more frequently than it used to. And I think some of that might have to do with the fact that you just have so much turnover on the roster from year to year. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that's certainly got to be part of it. But yeah, I mean, isn't that so much more fun though? When they're when it's truly fun. And anything can happen. Like,
oh boy, I feel like the SEC's really hurting itself from a playoff perspective.
Well, that's true.
I mean, they could. They're obviously they're going to get teams in the playoff, and I say teams because they'll have multiple teams that are going to be in the top 10 or wherever they need to be at the end of the year. But this was a league that coming into the year was thinking, hey, maybe we could get four, maybe we could get five if everything falls right. And they're just beating each other up so bad that I just don't see that happening now.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we used to see with the Pac-12 used to do that, cannibalize itself, things like that. Now, I think the SEC, they'll spin it and give the SEC the benefit of the doubt of it. Just shows you how strong the SEC is, that you really, you know, everybody's whatever. And so every loss will be a quality loss, which is not a benefit of the doubt that the Pac-12 teams used to get. But, you know, I think that's – it'll turn into just an argument for how strong the SEC is, and that'll be fine.
Yeah, no more is it about the fifth best team. It's going to be about the 13th best team.
Yeah.
And who got snubbed
at
number 13. We got a lot more Razorback football to go over in just a moment. But first, another word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They have been serving their community since 1971. They are committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Busy week here on campus. You got Razorback basketball that begins Friday night with the exhibition game against Kansas. You've got, obviously, Arkansas football going off campus this weekend to play Mississippi State. We mentioned it a minute ago, Arkansas soccer still in contention to win an SEC championship. The regular season winds down this week. They play Texas A&M on Thursday at Razorback Field, and then they end the season on Sunday over at Ole Miss. Still, you know, the potential is still there for them to win their fifth SEC title in six seasons. This is the fun part of the year, I feel like. I mean, there is a lot going on right now.
Yeah, we're getting into that crossover season, as we like to call it. And, yeah, there's tons going on. It's fun. I'm excited for basketball to get going. And, yeah, soccer winding down. When I realized they're finishing the regular season soon, I was, like, floored. I can't believe we've already gotten to that point. It feels – football season especially, it just puts me in such a time warp. I feel like it's flying by, but also, like, there's so much time left.
Tim Horton used to say that I think he said something along the lines of his wife said, you're going into the submarine at the beginning of football season, and we'll see you when you come back up in December.
Yes, exactly, yeah. It totally distorts my sense of time.
I did something kind of fun this week. I don't know. It was fun for me. I said, if the SEC had fantasy football, who would be the leaders from last week? And what stands out to me, at least, and this is only on 1 week, you know, it'll be kind of interesting to see if we keep doing this, just tracking it. Quarterback play is just not very good in the conference last weekend. Michael Van Buren would have had the most fantasy points with 20.
That's crazy. Yeah, I mean, quarterback play in the SEC, it's not been bad, but it's been up and down, kind of the same way that we just talked about with, you know, teams being, you know, the surprise undefeated teams and how it feels like anybody can lose to anybody and things like that. You know, like quarterback play, it feels like a lot of these guys, you don't know which version of them you're going to get, and you might get some good weeks. You know, they're not necessarily performing badly against the teams you expect them to, if that makes any sense.
I would, if I were going to pick the best SEC quarterback, I would probably say it's Carson Beck from Georgia. But when you look at his numbers, I mean, he's really struggled the last couple of weeks. I think he threw an interception or – against Texas, he threw two interceptions against Mississippi State. Just has not been real. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't maybe lived up to the expectations that people had for him. And you can probably say that for a lot of quarterbacks in the league. You know, obviously, Jalen Milroe, he's not playing very well at Alabama. Yeah, Maliava at Tennessee, I feel like it's just been kind of so-so in SEC play. The quarterback play in the conference has really, I feel like, been lacking. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why you don't have the number of undefeated teams like maybe you thought you'd have at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you're number two in fantasy, you know, theoretical fantasy points here is Jackson Arnold, who got benched and then unbenched.
Yeah, he came in after his starter committed 3 turnovers in 9 plays.
Yeah.
The running back play, though, was really good last week. You had Jaden Ball from Florida, had 5 touchdowns in their game. Trevor Etienne of Georgia is playing really well. Caden Durham, who we saw play here, was awfully good. Dylan Sampson, yeah, he didn't have his best game here in Fayetteville, but I still think he scored a couple of touchdowns. He's been really good for them. I feel like maybe going back to the quarterback thought, when you look at the numbers, the offensive numbers just as a whole, efficiency numbers haven't been real good, but the defensive numbers have been really good. I don't know. Are we seeing like bad offense in the SEC, or are we seeing just really good defense? It feels like it's somewhere maybe in between there.
Yeah, it's interesting, yeah, to kind of compare the two. And I think that's something you could always sort of debate and, you know, figure out who's really to blame or to credit for success or failure. So, I mean, yeah, it's been an odd season. And there's still so much of it left, I feel. You know, I guess I just feel like the SEC does not have the top, you know, they have superstars in that they have big names that a lot of people know and that are getting talked about week in, week out. It's not like they've got a bunch of anonymous guys, but I don't feel like, you know, they don't have like the Heisman guy, like that it's a foregone conclusion, you know, things like that, like that you maybe would see in.
Who would
in
you give years. Your Heisman vote to right now?
I have a Heisman vote, so am I allowed? I'm allowed to talk about.
You're allowed to talk. You can't say who you're voting for, but I mean, you can say like who you're thinking about.
Right now,
I mean,
probably,
you're not casting your vote today.
Right. Right,
I mean,
now,
I'm kind of in the same boat here.
If I were casting my vote today, it would probably be Jeanty from Boise State.
From Boise.
Yeah, I think he's my pick.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think he's so fun. I think he's so fun to watch. I think, you know, he's doing things that nobody's done in years. You know, it's that's what you want. That's what you want out of that. And I guess I just don't like that the Heisman has become like pick the quarterback of the best team.
So we were talking, and that's one of the reasons I asked Gino Toretta about this the other day, because I've got a Heisman vote too. And I'm always interested just to hear how different voters look at things differently. And I asked him, I said, you know, when do you start really paying attention to the best players? He said, probably not till the 1st of November.
Yeah, which is interesting. I mean, when you think about it, it is still relatively early in the season. And
he said he wants to see how players perform in their biggest games.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was one of the knocks that I had on Lamar Jackson, because I didn't vote for Lamar Jackson in 16. I think I went with Deshaun Watson number one that year. Jackson, in his last few games, I remember they played Wake Forest. They played, I think, Boston College. I know they played Kentucky. And I kept waiting for it. It's like, okay, make a play.
Yeah.
Make a play. And he just would not make enough plays late in those games. Now, that's not to say he wasn't a great player, because he is a great player, still, you know, maybe one of the best players in the NFL right now. But that year, I was underwhelmed with him in November. And I feel like he won the Heisman because of what he had done in September.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think, yeah, you can't call these things that early. It's the same way as, you know, teams we thought were going to stink in September have not. Or teams we thought were going to be great in September, like Florida State, stink. You know, so So I'm interested. So Boise State plays UNLV on Friday, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, because UNLV plays like half their schedule on Friday this year.
Right. It's crazy. I feel like I've watched so much UNLV football because Friday nights I can actually watch football.
I call the Fayetteville games, and Odom's son, Garrett, is Fayetteville High School's quarterback. And so it feels like every game, you know, like we're watching that, and then we're kind of tracking scores. And it feels like half of our games this year, we've been tracking UNLV's score as the game's going along.
But yeah, I'll be basically on Friday. I'm excited I get to watch that game because I want to see what Jeanty does in a huge game against UNLV. I mean, that's a huge game for those two teams that are vying for that G5 playoff spot, really. And so, you know, that's a big game for him. You know, obviously, sure, say what you want. It's UNLV. It's not a power team, whatever. But as far as Boise State's schedule, like, and UNLV is a very good team. They have a good defense. So, you know, I'll be interested to see what he does, you know, like you say, in big games there. And then down the stretch of the season when they get into, you know, as the stakes get higher, how he continues to do.
We expect that we're going to have Greg Gurley. He is the color commentator for the Kansas basketball radio broadcast on our podcast tomorrow, to look forward to this exhibition game Friday night. I spent some time yesterday listening to Bill Self speak to the media during his media day about a week ago. And, you know, from all indications, KU is going to have a pretty full roster coming in. I think they've got an injury to a player that's going to keep him out for the year. They had another player who they're expecting to get back into the fold, I think, this week. So it's going to be, you know, we heard Kyle Perry speak at our luncheon last week. Arkansas is going to be without a lot of players. We don't know who, but we know they're going to be without, you know, multiple players for this exhibition. KU, the number one team coming in full health. What are your thoughts on what we might see Friday night?
I think people need to set the bar low.
Well, Calipari said as much. I mean, he said, you know, look, we may lose by 30.
Yeah. And, well, I didn't realize he had said that specifically. I wasn't able to make it to the luncheon. But, yeah, I just think people are going to overreact. We're probably going to overanalyze it more than we should, you know, because it's the first time we're going to see this team and it's so exciting and whatever. But you can't read that much into it.
If you get a chance, go back and listen to the Calipari interview that we did on our podcast last Thursday. But he had a real humorous story in there. He said that his father used to tell him and his siblings to keep things in perspective. And he said that his sister went to Penn State and wrote a letter back to her parents one time and talked about her dorm had burned down and she had moved in with a man and they got married and congratulations, mom and dad, you're now grandparents. And then she ends the letter with, "Dad, everything I wrote is a lie. I failed chemistry and I just wanted to remind you to keep everything in perspective." So he used that as a way to talk about the Kansas game, saying, you know, look, it may not look good, but you got to keep it in perspective. They're not going to have all their players and it's going to be their first game of a new team, a new coaching staff. There could be some learning, some learning curves, some bumps in the road here the first few weeks of this.
Yeah, I think it'll be limiting in terms of what we can really learn about this team, and I don't think we'll be able to use it to do much conjecture as far as when the season begins, because anybody that I feel like is on the brink of being able to play, they're probably going to hold because they don't want to risk it, you know? So I think we maybe will see some of the younger players, like you said, he didn't say who exactly won't be playing. So maybe we'll see some of the younger players and that'll be good and interesting and good for them to play against some good players like Kansas has. So, you know, it doesn't mean make it useless. It doesn't mean it's not going to be fun to go to and cool to watch. But yeah, I think we'll have to be careful in how we talk about it, you know?
Well, I don't, you know, you want to win.
For sure.
For sure. But it's all about the experience, I feel like. It's about the experience of getting these guys. You want, I'm not even say, try to say his name, Big Z. Mm-hmm. You want him being able to post up a Hunter Dickinson and see how that feels.
Yeah.
You know, you want to be, you know, going against guys like KJ Adams and you know, all these great players that they have at KU. And so even if, you know, two or three players can't go in this game, the players who are going to get to play, they are going to get an experience that I feel like can help them down the road.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm interested in the format.
Yeah, because do we know? We don't know necessarily that they're just playing a regular basketball game.
I think KU, well, my suspicion is that they'll play something that's, you know, pretty close to a regular basketball game. Remember, you know, you had Arkansas-Purdue last year. You had KU-Illinois. You had Michigan State and Tennessee. And I think it was in the KU-Illinois game last year that they allowed 6 personal fouls. I think that's right. Hmm. And so I wonder, like, with Arkansas having fewer players available, if you might see something like that. So I suspect that it's going to be as close to normal basketball as possible, but it may not be the exact rules that you see, you know, when Lipscomb comes in.
Right, yeah, there will probably be some adjustments, especially if Arkansas is as shorthanded as we think it might be. So, yeah, the format will be something to watch. Just, yeah, it'll teach us some things. It's not going to show us everything.
By the way, the announce team for that on SEC Network just learned this yesterday. John Schrodinger is going to do play-by-play, and Seth Greenberg and Jimmy Dykes will be there serving as color analyst for this game. So they're bringing in some big basketball names to call this game. It's Calipari has the ability to draw a crowd. And, you know, people used to get so frustrated that Kentucky would get its exhibition games on TV and Kentucky would go to the Bahamas and SEC Network would go with them to the Bahamas. And I suspect, I don't know if I'm right, we're going to find out over the next couple of years, but I suspect it was more about Calipari than it was about Kentucky. And I think Arkansas is going to, you know, reap some of those benefits of having him as their coach over the next few years.
Yeah, I think they will. It'll be interesting to see how long it takes for, you know, I think about this in a football context a lot because I am a closer follower of college football. But, you know, I was talking to some friends recently about like why Alabama remains, you know, ranked as high as they are in football and things like that when they haven't looked that good recently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about sort of the historical bias, the like, well, it's Alabama, you know, why is, you know, Indiana's undefeated, but we say, oh, it's Indiana, so you can't rank them that high, you know, but if Alabama were undefeated, you know, things like that. So I'll be curious how much, because Arkansas is not a program in basketball, even though it does have some great history, is not a program that gets the national sort of benefit of the doubt that other programs do. And I'll be interested how long it takes for that to start to happen, I guess.
I think it's already happening.
You think so?
I think it is.
I wonder if there's still how long it will take for people outside of Arkansas to adjust to the new sort of expectation for Arkansas, you know, that you can't write them off. Does that make any sense?
It does. This may be related, it may not be. I know that when they brought Calipari out on the field the other day, you know what I was looking at?
What?
I was looking at the LSU crowd. I'm like, I wonder what they're thinking as they're watching this.
Yeah, I thought about that. I was like, did anybody in the LSU crowd, like how many of them just turn to somebody and say, oh my God, I forgot he's here now?
Yeah, it's like, oh crap.
Yeah, exactly.
Matt McMahon's got some trouble facing him.
Yep.
All right, we appreciate you being with us today. We've got more on our website, wholehogsports.com. Hope you'll join us there. Again, we'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. We'll see you then. Have a great day, everyone.